Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 189, Great Wargaming Survey 2017 with Jasper Ortiz. So I want to welcome all of you new and longtime listeners alike. You are in for a treat. It's been quite a while since we've had this very special guest on the show, and I am delighted that he is coming back. So I want to introduce you all to the one and only Mr. Jasper Ortiz. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for having me on the show. And compliments on pronunciation. That not very Americans manage to, or English-speaking people manage to give a presentable pronunciation of my last name. So
I will admit that way back, I think the first time you were on was like in 2012, 2013. And I asked you, how do I not butcher your last name? And so I wrote it down. And whenever you come on, I always make I phonetically write it out. So like if people looked at my show notes, they'd be like, oh, it's Y-A-S-P-R-O-A-R. And then I do a little hyphen and then ties because I know I'm going to mess it up. And so I try not to ruin people's names.
Well, thank you. It's appreciated.
Welcome. And we also have with us my friend and co-host, Mr. Mike Payne. Mike, how are you today?
I'm good. And there's no way I could even attempted to do Jasper's last name.
That's okay.
I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Jonathan told me
and I still forget.
Well, I love when you're on any podcast, any American, even people who know you really well, Jasper, they always pronounce it Jasper. And I cringe. I'm like, just do your homework. Just ask them and do it before.
That's okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, if people say Jasper, I'll just do my spiel that, you know, get off my claim. There's gold in these dark hills. And
Yeah. Well, I didn't know until Jonathan told me.
That's okay.
But, you know,
I was at a local game store here one time and, I know the owner by now, and he just sort of called me across the room, and somebody else said, "Jasper, really? Your name is Jasper?" Yeah, sorry.
No, it's not.
It's not uncommon in Europe.
That's why we are a quality publication here. We're very professional.
All right. Well, enough about that, I guess.
Well, we try. So, in case people aren't aware. Do you want to talk a little bit about what it is that you do aside of the Great Wargaming Survey? Because, I mean, that's a very special enterprise that you're doing this time of year, but that's not really what you normally do.
No, in my day job, I am the managing director of Coinsurite Publishers, which means that I coordinate mostly the day-to-day goings-on of our magazines, Ancient Warfare, Ancient History, Medieval Warfare, and Wargame Soldiers and Strategy. And I also edit Ancient Warfare again. I didn't do that for a couple of years, and now I'm back to it because I didn't have enough to do. but it's, you know, it's the old love, so that's okay.
Well, and then for people who like to listen to podcasts, they might also be aware that you are now a recurring face and personality on the Ancient Warfare magazine podcast, too.
Yep. Again, we started that for and during my original tenure as Ancient Warfare editor. In Angus looked it up. I think it was in 2008. So when we did the first episode, we're back there again. I think we're recording another episode next week, and we have the Wargame Soldiers and Strategy podcast. And I think they're recording one very soon as well, and they maybe were planning to leave me out of it because I'm not in the general time zone, and you know, and I'm a guest on your show, and I got the Ancient Warfare podcast, and I think I've got another podcast coming up soon, another guest appearance. So I'm like, I'm not lacking in venues for talking about stuff.
You're never gonna be bored.
Do you want to plug that other show?
What?
Do you want to plug the other show on which you will be a guest?
If I remembered, but because I have a jet lag, I completely forget at the moment. The new show. This is not fair.
Is it the Veteran Wargamer?
Yeah.
Jay Arnold's great show. People should listen to it. I'm a huge fan.
Yes. It's new to me. I have to completely admit, but he asked me. I was like, well, you know, everything for the Great Wargaming Survey, I'll talk about it till I'm blue in the face. So yes. My apologies, Jay, for not remembering immediately.
Jay's a really good guy. He's a longtime listener of our show. He's a big fan of Meeples and Miniatures, big fan of WSS. He's a big fan of Henry Hyde. It makes perfect sense to me why he wants you on the show.
Oh, you're going to have to send me a link on Barbarian so I can listen to it.
It's very well done. I will tell people, it's a little bit of a side, but I will tell people that one episode of his show got me more riled up than anything else I've ever listened to. And it was about dice etiquette, which I think is something that gets a lot of people. You have firm dice opinions on.
Yeah.
But it was very well done. So I applaud him. And if people don't listen to it, they should listen to it.
I'm going to subscribe on my iTunes.
You should.
Yeah,
I'm sure he would like that.
I listen to a lot of shows and audiobooks and stuff, so sure. Yeah.
It's nice, it passes the time.
It so, does that, yeah.
It can. I mean, unless they're bad, in which case you're just like, oh, when is it over?
Well, there's always another one.
See, that's true. That. Why don't we talk about the Great Wargaming Survey?
Okay. Where would you like to start?
So in the beginning, there was light, and then why don't we move a little bit ahead of that?
And then there was WSS.
Yes.
And then I think in 2014, we did the first Great Wargaming Survey. Yep. I think it came about because we had seen that one of the competitors that was Miniature War Games at the time, and about to it was the editor before Henry, Andrew Hubbock, I think. They still did a survey, but it was based on paper forms, and I figured that in the 21st century, the number of returns you're going to get on paper survey forms is not going to be very big. So we figured, well, maybe we can do better. Also because I think Henry had taken over by then and he was not interested in doing it. So I didn't feel like I was stepping on his toes and Guy and I was like, let's just try it, set it up and see if we get, we decided we'd be happy if we get 2,500 responses. And the first one got, I think it got something like 7,000 responses in a month.
Nice.
A lot of people were interested in what the outcomes were, and then we decided, well, apparently this is something that people are really interested in taking and in seeing the results, and it's actually fun to do too, because you can read, I get to read all the open questions, which are just, you get so many responses there, you can't report on them except for just picking some things out. And so we decided to make it into a yearly thing. And so in 2015, we got 8,000 responses. In 2016, we just didn't manage to get 10,000, like bar three. So we're hoping to go over that this year. And we made a good start. First week, we had 6,200 responses, so it always goes very quickly in the first week now, and I'm starting to see that people sort of start to, people look for it this time of year now, like, oh, it's the War Game Survey again. Hey, let me take part and tell my friends and share it. It got, we've only, I think, so far we've used our own newsletter and Facebook and Twitter, and it just spread like crazy in the first couple of days. So
it's that's now where it's time I saw, to, that's where I saw it on Facebook. So I yeah. I shared it too.
Thank you. Everybody's been sharing it, it seemed like.
Yeah, well, it's fun. You know, the people that that I hobby with, we like that kind of stuff. So
that's the idea.
I happen to look back because I knew when you launched the survey way back in 2014 that you came on the show to talk about it. And I was trying to remember what the episode number was. So I looked it up. It's episode 123 in case anyone's interested. And then I looked at our stats. People downloaded that episode of the podcast where you talked about the debut of the Great Wargaming Survey 2014 over 3,000 times.
Wow.
And I was like, that's ridiculous.
That's interesting. Well, no wonder you have them
really on. Interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's a win-win situation. What can I say?
Yeah. Well, it's a great idea. I enjoyed doing it. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Well, I think one of the interesting things that you do isn't just the survey, but it's how you promote it. So you mentioned the newsletter, for example, but what I think really makes it interesting are the videos that you have people do. So like Henry Hyde, people should know who he is. If you don't, he's been on the show, like look at our episode guide. But he did a fantastic video this time around that just...
Yeah. Some people get very... We started doing that last year and some people get very creative. I hope we get some more. A lot of people have promised more videos, but...
I recorded mine tonight. You'll get it shortly.
Thank you. Henry went got very, very creative. I think maybe some people probably feel a little competitive towards others who do these videos, and then they go and I can outdo him. I can be, and you know, that's fun.
His is brilliant though. Like people have to watch it if they haven't seen it. We'll put a link in the show notes because oh man, it's so good. Like, I watched it during my break at work. And so I'm sitting there and I got my headphones in and I'm watching and I'm like, ha, 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 ha. And everyone's looking at me like, what is wrong with you? This is a library. Be quiet. And I'm just like, this is so funny because he's great. Because I mean, he's a funny guy. I wouldn't expect that of him necessarily.
Henry loves making up stories and silly things. I mean,
it was good though.
Yeah,
it was really good. And I think it's a neat way for people to kind of discover some other manufacturers and other enterprises out there that are part of the whole wargaming hobby. And it's nice how everyone can kind of help one another.
Yeah. Although I have to say, I mean, we always, people sometimes say, oh, you know, how are you going to make sure that the little guys get recognized too? And this game and that manufacturer. And I always say, we try to avoid listing any specific games, any specific systems, any specific manufacturer, just because of that reason, because you know it's impossible to list everything. So sometimes we use like some examples to illustrate what we're trying to go for, because every year I look back in the responses and I see that, you know, not every question is formulated as well as it could be. And then people, you know, interpret it differently than what I meant. And there's only one exception to that. And we introduced that this year. We always have a question about, you know, what period or setting do you really like? What's your favorite? And we always just used to have, you know, a variety of historical ones and then science fiction as one and fantasy as one. And Guy Bowers, the editor of WSS, and I discussed that beforehand. And we said, no, this is you got to split out 40K and Age of Sigmar, because it's trying to dance around those is just silly. And they're so big and so popular.
They've
become a category of their own.
Well, that's okay. People play it.
People play it. I think I noticed that clearly we are not getting that many people who play that game to take our survey.
That's funny. Not surprising, though.
No, well, I've talked about that before, but, you know, how successful are we at actually appealing to the average war gamer, which is hugely difficult, and the only way to fix it seems to be to get as many people as possible to take it. I'll be focusing on that in the next few weeks, trying to go to different websites and maybe get some video, get some YouTubers or something to promote it. Because at the moment, but this, of course, is a completely intermediate result, Warhammer Age of Sigmar is the least popular setting of all of them.
That doesn't surprise me.
But you wouldn't know that if you didn't ask.
True.
Yeah. And 40K is number 6 from the top.
Also doesn't surprise me.
And interestingly, science fiction and fantasy are still in the top 3. They're number 2 and number 3. And they specifically say science fiction, not including 40K, fantasy, not Warhammer Age of Sigmar.
Is number 1 Napoleonics?
No. No, number one is the same one as has been number one for historical wargaming for every single great wargaming survey. It's World War II.
Okay.
Really?
Yep, it always is.
You know, I've killed myself for years to not get into World War II, and now I'm going to do it.
Bolt action's where it's at.
Screw bolt action.
Oh, yeah, so much fun.
I'll play it, but I'm not going to run it.
Bolt action, Flames of War, Battle Group,
by the two Fat Lardies,
Chain of Command, I Ain't Been Shot, Mom. All of them combined. That's what it is. Also, not unusual. The medieval era and Dark Ages are always very high up. Napoleonics is pretty high up. Ancient. It's fairly. I think looking at it so far, it's fairly similar to previous years, but I'd have to really compare the two.
What do you like to play, Aspa?
I currently paint, working on my World War II collection, and I always work on my very slowly but ever expanding American War of Independence collection.
Oh, Rev War, huh?
Mm-hmm. Black Powder, or Land of the Free.
Oh, okay. I played Black Powder. I haven't tried Land of the Free yet.
Land of the Free is a very nice set. It gives a little more like you really have to try and think about what you're going to do next, and it has some interesting tweaks in it. The disadvantage we found is that it doesn't work very well if you want to play larger battles or with multiple people.
Yeah, well, that's probably true with a lot of rules.
Yeah, but Black Powder handles it very well.
Yeah, I like Black Powder. I have to run everything out of my head because that's just the way I am. I don't want to look at a rule book, but I'll play it, and I'm probably going to be playing it Hobby Bunker Game Day coming up soon. I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on what Richard Clayton puts on the table.
Sure. He runs a good game. Carnage and Glory is normally what he likes to run.
I like Carnage and Glory. Have you played Carnage and Glory, Aspen?
No, that's I think I've seen it at Historicon the one time I was there, and I don't think I've ever seen it played in Europe.
It's a game, right? What's that again?
It's all computerized.
Oh, computer moderated. Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'd look into that.
Yeah, it's fun. Next time you go to Historicon, sign up for one of Nigel Marsh's games. He's the author.
Okay.
Yeah. He'll get you going. I haven't been to Historicon in a while. Maybe next year. Maybe I'll get to meet you if you go.
Yeah, so we'll try. It's not a cheap time of year to go flying across the Atlantic, but just, you know, and this year, of course, we just came a week too late to go to Historicon, but just that's just how it worked out.
Yeah, well, you got to do things the way you got to do them.
Yep.
That's true, but you get to hit up a lot of really good conventions in Western Europe and in Southern UK, too.
I usually go to Crisis and I go to Salute. If you want to talk, you know, talk to somebody about going to lots of different conventions, you need to get Guy on sometime because he goes to a lot more. Or Guy and Henry, that would be an interesting combo. See who talks the most.
Salute looks like it's pretty cool.
Salute is really big, really busy. And you can spend a hell of a lot of money. But if you're looking to play a lot of games, that's not really the best place to go, I don't think.
It's more a trade show.
Right? Hmm?
It's more of a trade show than like a gaming convention.
Yeah, well, that's it. I'm sure we discussed that before. It's been discussed in your show, the difference between American and European conventions.
Yeah, American cons tend to have a lot more of participation games, whereas European ones, you see them presented.
Yes, there's definitely participation games at Salute, but not all of them. And there's more and more. It seems like there are more and more trader demo games, so that's, you know, simplified or small versions of a bigger game, so to just get a taste of a game, and then you might want to, you know, buy the starter set. I think there might be more participation games at Crisis. And that's also becoming a very big show where you can spend a hell of a lot of money. It just is, I think it's slightly more charming location. Salute is held in the Excel Center, which is just, it's a giant exhibition center, which means it's, you know, it's has all the charm of an airplane hangar. And it's a big concrete building, you know, with it's made so that trucks can move in and out easily, and it's all logistically clever. And there's an you know, the big outside hallway with lots of food stalls where you can buy overpriced snacks.
Yeah, spend more money.
Yeah. And Crisis is held in an old warehouse at the docks in Antwerp. And it's only a 5-minute walk from the city center. I mean, it's also, you know, an old warehouse. You know, if you like sort of industrial heritage type building with, you know, brick and some faded lettering and stuff, I kind of like that better than.
Well, I think it would be fun just to go to Antwerp anyway. That would be cool.
That'd be a blast.
Yeah, I think I'd like that.
Antwerp is cool.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Don't drink Belgian beer at British speed, because the percentages are not the same.
Yeah, it's too late for me. I don't drink it anymore.
It's a good word to the wise, though. I'm sure that's done in many a person.
Yeah, I know. That's definitely that's a kind of advice that's ignored by just about everybody. If you look at various faces at Crisis. You've seen
that before. Quite a interesting way to phrase it.
Yeah. It's nice. I really like that show.
Would you call that your favorite?
I think it's it's a bit more relaxed. It's certainly, you know, it's a 2-hour drive for us instead of, you know, what is it, 5 hours to Calais and then taking the Channel and then going to driving into London and doing the Salute. Setup is a whole rigmarole in itself. You have to report in at a traffic control center and you say, okay, this is my car and I'm coming in now. And then somebody gives you a receipt and you have to show it to somebody else. And then you get let into the thing and you have, you know, a set amount of time to set up and you have to get out of there. You know, it's because it is a big professional exhibition center, and right next door, they're setting up the show or the whole big hall for the London Marathon, which is held the day after Salute. you know, and there's big trucks and you know, that's sponsored by Virgin, I think. So, you know, it's a big company setting up all kinds of big fancy stalls. So, you know, I can imagine that they have to do it that way, but it's certainly for traders. It's a lot more hassle than just driving to Antwerp and saying, hi guys, we're here again. And yeah. Okay, unload and go have a beer.
I'm losing my interest in Salute.
Yeah.
Well, me too. Sure that's fair, but I don't know. Yeah, Northwest Europe in early November isn't the best time of year to go, maybe. It's probably cheaper.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever get over there, but I'd like to check it out.
Put it on your bucket list.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to get to Historicon next year. That's all I'm worried about.
Yeah. Maybe a bit easier.
I'm hoping year after it might be my first one. We'll see.
You haven't been to Historicon yet?
No. It's on the list because a certain someone we know by the name of Adrian keeps on saying, hey, John, we should really go to Historicon. And me always saying, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But it's expensive, isn't it? Yep. Okay. Well, we'll think about that.
Yeah. I was like you for a long time, and then I went 5 years in a row.
Well, they keep moving around, too. I mean, who knows where it'll be next year?
It's supposed to be in Pennsylvania.
Really?
I think so. That's probably why I'm going to go. I'm not going to Fredericksburg again.
Well, they had those venue problems this year, so who knows?
Yeah, well, things can change. I know one time we thought we were going to Baltimore. It was going to be a big place like Jasper was just talking about. Jasper, excuse me. And he can't get it right. And
this sounds like something that would be interesting to put in. I don't know how you would phrase it, but to put in the Great Wargaming Survey for next year, like a little bit more about conventions, because there was one or two questions about like trade shows and conventions.
That's hard. It's so related to where you live. You know, if you're a British wargamer, if you're willing to drive, I think you can just about go to a wargame show every weekend.
That's the impression I get. Yeah, I bet you could.
That's nuts.
Probably not every weekend, but certainly every other one.
Yeah, there's a ton of them.
In continental Europe, there's Tactica in Hamburg, there's Crisis in Antwerp, and there's some Italian ones, and there's a lot of smaller ones, but you're looking at a lot bigger distances for smaller shows. In the United States, you know, you have Fallen, Cold Wars, Historicon, and a lot of smaller conventions or conventions that are tied in with more general board gaming. And then you can get really big. But the distances you're talking about are enormous. And usually the time investment. I mean, most European conventions are only going to be one day or maybe 2 days tops. People expect to just come in, look around, buy their stuff, maybe play a game, talk to some friends, look around again, spend some more money, and leave. And, you know, if you're going to go to Historicon, you're probably, you know, most people probably plan to go there, be there for 2 or 3 days.
You got to come up to Huzzah. That's where we got to get you up there.
Yeah, you would love that.
Yeah, 3 days of Wargamer.
Beautiful Portland, Maine. Great food on the water.
Great looking tables. Great players.
I've seen some really nice photos. It is true that you got some. Yeah.
Those were probably mine.
Maine. Yeah.
It's funny. Looking at a smaller, I mean, for us, it's a larger convention, but a smaller convention overall, TotalCon, that's like a week.
Yeah. A week? Games,
a week. It's 5 days,
Wednesday,
right?
Wednesday through Sunday, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's basically a week. It's a work week of gaming.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, I go for 3 days, and I mean, I love it, but like, there's no way I could go for a week. I'd love to, but that's not in the cards.
Yeah, I could possibly go down on a Thursday, maybe.
A lot of people do it though, and they love it. Yeah. They get a lot of people do it.
It's just one more night. You got to pay for a room, so.
And that's the thing. I mean, you put in extra time for hotels and food and stuff like that, but
yeah, it adds up.
It does, but
yeah, it does.
People do it. The largest tabletop gaming convention in New England, and but still it's small. Like you look at a Gen Con or a Historicon, and it's small. And
well, yeah, I've never been to one of those.
But people do it. Do it for a week. It's a lot of time.
So how do you come up with all the ideas for the survey in the first place?
The questions?
Yeah.
Do you have like a survey board?
Do
you have like a survey board? There's a group of you have these meetings and
wording. The first time we sort of did it that way. I just came up with a list of questions and I talked to various people, like, you know, you think something is missing. And I asked a lot of people to just go through a test version a couple times to make sure it was doable in 5 to 10 minutes. And then a friend of mine who works for the Dutch National Statistics Office, he looks through this kind of stuff a lot. He works with it a lot. He said, well, you know, for next year, you could add a few questions and take some other ones out. And then, you know, the year after, you put those questions you've taken out, put them back in and take some other ones out so that you still have some, you know, you can bear some questions probably won't change. The responses won't change very much from year to year, but maybe, you know, if you do them every other year or every 3 years, you can have a broader set of questions and still keep the survey itself doable in a small amount of time. And I just look at what, you know, we have like sort of suggestions, questions. And I look at what people say, you know, and people comment on the survey news items like, hey, I wish that you'd ask about this or that. And if I keep notes, and when it's time to do another survey, I just look at them again and go, okay, is that something we could include? Is it a question that's legitimate to ask? Is it useful to ask? Is it a question that you can answer in multiple choice? I mean, one question that I don't really know if it's useful, but kind of interesting, sort of like, what is, you know, how big is your gray army? How many unpainted minis do you have that you want to use for some project at some point still?
Oh, geez, I couldn't give you an answer to that.
And that would be one problem. Nobody knows. But the other one is, how do you measure that? I mean, if somebody has who collects 6mm Bacchus miniatures, if he has 10 kilos of that stuff, he might be good for years. Or on the other hand, he might, you know, it only takes a couple hours to paint a brigade. So, do you measure that in the amount of time you need to paint it? Or is it, you know, weight's not going to work because, you know, metal is so much heavier than resin or plastic. Volume is not going to work because of different scales. So
I'm not sure how you can really ask that question.
Or you could just do video response and be like, it's this tall. like for me, it's up to my stomach. If you looked at my pile, if I made a pile out of it, it'd be up to my stomach, and I'm 6 foot tall, so it gives you an idea about how tall it would be and about yay wide, and so that is my pile.
But that's a volume answer,
right? Well, sort of, but I mean,
and that's the pile that will never be painted ever,
the one which I will be offloading should people be interested in.
I thought the questions were interesting. I don't remember from year to year what you left in and what you didn't. Some seem familiar, but
The question about where you buy your wargaming supplies, that was not in 2016, but it was in 2015. The new question is the one before that, which was what style of tabletop wargaming do you prefer? And that's, I don't know, I'm going to see how that works.
Well, I thought it was an interesting question. Anyway.
It was like, do you like tournament games, campaign-driven games, sports-style games, monster survival games, you know, sort of split out that way.
Yeah, I liked when you had it so that I could answer to more than one thing.
Me too.
You know, I don't really like it when there's 10 things on the list and I can only pick one, and there's more than one that I want to pick. So I kind of like that part of the survey.
Yeah, those questions are, we make all, there's such changes we sometimes make as well. You know, you go, ah, that, you know, we forced people to pick an answer to that one, but they might prefer to say, I like this one better than that one, but I still like that one. Or I like all
right. Yeah, because I don't just play, I mean, I have my favorites, but I'll play anything. I'll play stuff that I don't like rather than not play.
Really? I don't think I knew that about you.
Yeah, I will.
I'm a pretty firm.
Put some rotten game on the table. Games. We've got nothing else to do. I'm playing.
I thought it was interesting, and I might be misremembering, considering I took the survey last night when I was half asleep in bed. So who knows how my answers came out? Apologies for that.
You better do it again.
I got to do it at work and at home. Don't do that because that's going to make someone mad. But I thought it was interesting that you required an age as a required question, but I think the gender question was not required. I think that was an optional question.
I don't remember.
Yeah. It's because the gender question is, you know, for some people it's problematic. And an age group, of course, is maybe less defining. I don't know. There's some things, it's just more of a sense that or that we go, well, you know, do we have to make this conditional or not? I mean, one of the main reasons for doing the Great Wargaming Survey was the constant discussion about, oh, the grading of the hobby. Well, if you want to answer that question, you're going to have to do a survey for years, and you're going to have to make sure that people say how old they are.
Right.
True.
The gender question, frankly, we've done the survey for, this is the fourth year, and I don't think not male gender, because we had in other years with some varieties, has never gotten over 2%. So, you know, it probably has something to do with how important we think the result is going to be, or how important it is for, you know, for the analyses we want to make.
It could be that I was maybe a little hyper aware of that because an upcoming show later this year, I'm going to be having a special guest on. We're going to be, I hope, properly tackling the issue of women in wargaming to try to dispel this whole mythos of that wargaming is for men, which is crap. It's for people who like to wargame. It doesn't matter what gender you are. So I think maybe because of that, I was a little more like interested in what sort of results would come about for that sort of question, and maybe why I paid a little extra attention. But I was like, the one above it is required, the one and like all the ones below it were required, but that one was not. It struck me in my half asleep days as being like, now that is interesting. If I remember this, I will ask about it.
I'm not sure if it was a conscious decision, honestly.
I would just like to see more women in the hobby, you know, whether it's on the survey or not. They're interesting players, some of them, you know. As a matter of fact, I've got a friend that's a great GM. She does all kinds of cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And we can use more people like that in the hobby. You're talking about the gray in hobby. Don't drive people away, get people involved, right?
Anyone and everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
As long as you're not a jerk, doesn't matter. Just have fun and play.
Yeah, that's the only disqualification, really.
Yeah, I don't want to play with any jerks because life is too short for that. That's a question you should have on there. Have people, like, what kind of gamer do you think you are, and what kind of gamer would other people say you are? Now, that's a telling question. That would not be objective.
You won't get an honest answer to that.
Yeah, I can tell you that a lot of, you know, if at the end there's a question, you know, what would you like to see changed or something similar. And trying to phrase it in a somewhat positive way, but there's always a lot of people who manage to put in there at some points, like, I wish there were fewer jerks in the hobby. A lot of people apparently have bad luck that way.
Maybe you should ask what percentage of opponents that you played with this year are jerks. Let's see what kind of answer we get.
List examples.
I got a personal lead, a zero on that answer. I haven't had anybody. No jerks.
Lucky.
Correlate that with the average number of games played in a year, and then get something about the total number of jerks in the hobby. No, I don't.
Yeah, but well, I don't even know if I want to know.
Nice little pie chart with it and everything.
Yeah.
A lot of fun with numbers.
Yeah, oh yeah, you can make, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like to think that, you know, people after a while realize that nobody wants to play with them and they just go away, go get some, find some other hobby.
I hope.
You know, I think they do. So, I mean, maybe there might be something that are stubborn and going to hang around, but I think a lot of them, you know, they can't be having fun.
No.
No, that's not fun.
I don't think so.
You know?
Well, it makes for a good separate topic for a podcast, I think, you know. What is a wargaming jerk? I mean, I suspect you can probably be a jerk without realizing it.
See, we don't even need a separate podcast. We're going to take care of it right here.
Well,
right now.
I can imagine the mail on that, all the feedback. One on pet peeves, which might be an interesting question for the survey. Not that you need us to tell you what questions you should put on the survey.
No, well, that's fine. I like suggestions. That would be another. I try not to have too many open questions. And I'm not sure I could categorize all the possible pet peeves.
That was something I learned.
Yeah, that would have to be a whole separate survey.
It's a long list.
Jonathan did a whole show on it.
We were trying to limit it to 5 pet peeves at gaming conventions. Uh-huh. And I tell you, that was 5. An interesting one to do. And then because of all the feedback we got from people about that episode, we were then like, we got to do another pet peeve episode. So we did another pet peeve episode that listeners gave, just things that they annoy them in gaming. And oh man, like, we have enough stuff. I could do like 8 episodes just with what people gave us then. And it would be hilarious and sad and thought provoking all at the same time. People like to tell you what really annoys them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, good idea. You have material there.
Yeah, and hey, maybe that would bump you from 10,000 to 20,000 responses.
What annoys you in the air?
Yeah, I have to say that I didn't find any questions on the survey that I didn't think didn't belong there. It all made sense to me. I thought it was pretty good.
It's a very well thought out survey.
Yeah, it was. It was good. It was fun. Cool. And I'm really looking forward to finding out the results.
Me too. So the survey runs for roughly a month, right?
Yeah, from July. We started on July 19th through August 19th.
And then you'll take some time to like look at everything and analyze all the results that you get. And you do that, what, like over the course of like 2-3 weeks, a month or so?
Usually I do it over a period of several months, and I'm going to do it again like I did last year, just do individual blogs about it, because then I can just, you know, if I have an afternoon, I can go, okay, I want to look at this, look at it, report it, and put it out there as long as I want it to be, because the first couple times we did it in a magazine article, and, you know, the reporting on numbers and results in a magazine article is actually very complicated, because you have very limited amount of space. You want to do a lot. You want to also be, you know, somewhat precise in how you say it. And you have to be careful not to end up with all kinds of, you know, convoluted sentences and or needing an enormous number of graphs, which is not going to make people the layout very happy.
No, but they're fun to look at. No, do you imagine?
Yeah, well, I thought you would just have a list of, you know, so many answered this way, et cetera, you know?
I could do that, but, you know, we have, what is it, 30 questions?
Is that how many?
Those questions have quite a few possible answers, and then you have, you know, hopefully a few thousand more than we have now, some more than last year, responses.
That's a lot of math.
It's going to be a long list of, okay, so many people said this, so many people said this. So, you know,
30 pages later, question two.
That's one thing that I think I know noticed this year rather than the past, is I think I commented more than I have. I don't know why. Maybe it was just the way the questions were asked.
See, I commented less than usual.
But really, because I mean, I usually have some kind of comment, but I don't know.
I guess I was chatty. More involved because of all the different options. I felt there were more options, and I love being able to choose multiple ones. But I thought that was more of that. So I was like, since I'm already choosing like 9 things for, you know, this one question, and then the box that, you know, you could check, say, other and add extra stuff. I was like, what else am I going to write?
Yeah,
I don't know. I found things. I don't even remember what I said, but I found something.
You always do.
Yeah, I guess I do.
You do.
I have a lot of interests. I'm interested in almost everything in the hobby. You know, with a few exceptions, like rules.
Oh my goodness, that's true.
I admit we have to have them, but I'm not crazy about them.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you'll do a series of blog posts.
Yeah.
Will they only be blog posts, or will you do like, say, a short teaser in the magazine and then be like, and go to our blog for more information, blah, blah, blah?
Might, but, you know, I'd have to discuss it with Guy, but a one-page article in the magazine is going to be essentially end up being filler, and we don't like filler in the magazine. We need, you know, we want to use
good column inches.
You have limited real estate in the magazine, so you need to use that for it get the most out of it.
Makes sense. And then you'll promote the blog post through your normal social media, right?
Yeah,
Facebook and so forth.
Yep, certainly we'll do that. Newsletter and everything. And what always works, it seems to work, is, you know, when the new survey is coming up, we tend to just post, like, you know, a separate post, like, okay, the new survey is coming up, and if you want to read all the old stuff, it's here. And then people are going to go and read it all in much higher numbers suddenly.
Lord knows I do. I read them when you put them out. And then the following year, I'm always like, so what did people say last time? And what did I think I said last time? And then I try to like write that down before I take the survey.
But if you, you know,
I wish I did that.
For those blogs, I just tend to, you know, I just pick a question. But if you guys go, you know, I would like to know what people said about this, or can you, you know, is there any correlation you could see between this and this? You know, by age or by nationality or by preference. Let me know. It's kind of fun to see if we can grab any specific data out of it, because you can combine things. You know, that's even more fun. You can go, okay, people who just said here, you know, who liked only or really interested in tournament gaming, what do they say about these things?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't think about that one.
Yeah, because you use SurveyMonkey, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they have a lot of really cool analytical stuff in there, and I think they make it easy to kind of get at stuff.
Yeah, they make it very easy. You can filter all kinds of ways, which is fun to do, but even if you have 10,000 responses, you could pretty quickly narrow it down to till you have a group of, you know, 35 wargamers, and you go, okay, saying that people who are like this and this want this, maybe not. But, you know, if you can keep it to a decent subset, sure, I think you can say some interesting things.
I have a survey question of my own about the magazine. Do you have any sense of what you guys cover the most, as like a time period or a certain style of gaming or anything like that? What are you guys usually trying to put out there? I mean, is it World War II more than Rev War, or do you just try to?
Well, there's, you know, we have 6 issues per year, and as you know, they're themed, we try to sort of cycle the themes so that we get through the most important ones regularly. But, you know, we make sure that World War II is always a theme at least once per year.
That's what I figured you had to do that.
A theme at least once a year. So right. There's a couple other ones that are slightly lower on the totem pole that get maybe, you know, have to be a theme once every other year.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of like an ancient warfare. You got to do Romans every so often, or predominantly, because that's what people want.
Yeah, it's slightly easier with Ancient Warfare than with the magazine, but we, you know, we could, you know, now that we have the great wargaming survey, we could very easily go, okay, we'll just make sure that we have a theme out of the, you know, the top six popular historical settings, but that's maybe a little bit, you know, too limited.
Yeah, but then on the other hand, you kind of have to cover those if that's what's popular.
You kind of have to. So, well, we're always looking at the themes and see maybe, you know, if the theme are gonna the themes are gonna be slightly less dominant than they are now.
So, what do you do about that? Okay, we're gonna do World War II. So, what do you do? I mean, is it do you find somebody who's running a World War II game and do an article on that, or?
It's generally a combination of, you know, when we decide, we go, okay, we need another World War II theme. Then we go, okay, which ones did we do over the last couple of years? You know, and Guy often has ideas like, I would like to do this period or that particular setting sometime. And then he goes out and, you know, he has a group of fairly regular authors. He's going to tell them, hey, you know, is this topic something that you want to do something with? You might have seen a game at a show, and it might contact those people, say, hey, you know, we're doing a theme that is in your game is perfect for it. You want to tell us something about, you know, the terrain you built or the scenario you used or the rules adaptations you made. It's always, you know, We try to find articles that you can do something with, even if the theme is not really your thing. The idea is that, you know, a well chosen, well written scenario can be adapted to, you know, if it's a World War II thing, maybe you can change it so that you can use it for World War I or the modern era, or, you know, if it's just some kind of skirmish action, maybe it gives you an idea that, you know, without the vehicles and the modern artillery, maybe you can use it in the Napoleonic era.
Yeah, I agree that you can probably do that with almost anything if you think about it a little bit. That's one of the things I do like about magazines. Even if there's something in there that I'm not specifically interested in, I can still glean some useful information for myself out of it because it's there.
That's the idea. If you do your article right, if you edit it correctly, if you commission the article correctly, that you can always, you know, get something out of it more than just straight up fact. So, you know, if you have a painting article, just to indicate the difference or what we're trying to do anyway, you know, you can have a painting article where you just say, okay, you know, we're going to paint this guy, and we start with this color, then this color, then this color, then this color. And you're done. Or you can have a painting article where you say, okay, we're trying to get this effect. And to get this effect, we're trying to, you know, make this kind of mix. And then we, you know, we layer it with that so that you get, and that might be, you know, for a specific figure. But if you read that article, you might go, okay, that's the effect they wanted to reach. And I don't want to do that figure, but I want to do this figure. But that's a technique I can pick up and try.
That's how it works for me. You might be doing a World War II figure, but I'm doing a pulp figure.
Yeah.
And but I got some good ideas from reading the article, so that works. That works for me too.
That's what we're trying. You know, that's what we always try to do with every article. But not always possible.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's everything's a crapshoot. You just have to do the best you can, right?
Well, you know, if you're going to make people pay for what you produce, the idea is that you try to eliminate the casino in the crapshoot.
Yeah, well, that's what the survey's for.
Yeah, the survey helps, certainly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And that's why there's a question.
My experience.
You know, what kind of articles do you really like, and which ones do you like least? That certainly helps.
Yeah, I like almost everything except for the sci-fi stuff doesn't necessarily turn me on. But that's just me. I know a lot of people love that stuff.
They do. A lot of people do. Yeah.
I mean, almost anything historical, I think, is interesting. And then I like the pulp stuff because that's the kind of crap I run. But I'm interested in your Ancients magazine too. I don't think I've seen that.
You haven't? It's been in it's been in Barnes and Noble and stores like that since maybe.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I go into Barnes and Noble. Maybe I have seen it. I guess I haven't grabbed it off the shelf yet.
Ancient Warfare magazine. It's not a.
It's a historical magazine.
Purely historical, but. Right. We try to get as much into the nuts and bolts as we think we can, and sometimes we try and discuss wargamerisms. We won't call them a wargamerism, but the interesting part of doing both is that for wargaming and any kind of hobby where you need to make a decision about how stuff works. You know, if you want to do an ancient war game and you want to have, two Greek hoplite armies fighting each other, you have to figure out some kind of way to make that work. But from the academic point of view, I think we still haven't figured out exactly how that worked. There's people still arguing now, they thrust underarm, they thrust overarm. It's two shield walls really actually pushing against each other, or no, it's not. It's, shield walls that approach each other. It's a flexible formation. No, they used the, they would grab the, if the hoplite shield has a central handle through which you put your arm and then you grip it at the end. And there's a grip on the other end too for a round shield. So people who argue that they would actually be able to grab their neighbor's shield to really make it a fixed shield wall.
Interesting.
But there's all kinds of these theories. And of course, if you're a wargamer, you go, I want to play my game. Is it, is it option A or B?
Well, it's an art form too, so you can pretty much do whatever you want. At least I think so. But it's still nice to know the, what is known.
That's what we try to do with Ancient Warfare magazine. We try to provide, what is known, what do we think we know. Hopefully, try and give the current state of affairs without getting too technical.
What's in the latest issue?
The issue that's just gone to print is Julius Caesar versus Pompey the Great in the Balkans in 49 and 48 BC.
Oh, that sounds good war gaming.
That should be a shoe-in for popularity, we hope. I mean, yeah, Julius Caesar, we haven't done very much with, and it's really, that's meat and potatoes of Republican Roman legionaries fighting other Republican Roman legionaries.
Yeah, I might have to look for that one.
It'll be out in a week or two, and it'll probably be September before it's in stores in America. But
it's a good magazine.
Well, thank you.
And Mike, you can always just listen to the podcast too until you can get your hands on the issue.
That's true. Yeah, we'll be doing the podcast about Caesar and Pompey. That'll be out in early September, I think.
So your podcast covers the current issue of the magazine?
Yeah, well, we have it's a monthly podcast, and we have always an in-between issue now, episode now, where we discuss something random that has something to do with warfare in the ancient world, and then the next episode is going to be about the latest issue, and we discuss. It can go every which way. We try to get canvas questions from the readership and by Patreon.
You got me really interested now. I want to listen to the podcast. I didn't even know you had one,
Mike. Oh. The last two I listened to were pretty good. There was one about what ancient battle would you like to witness?
That was a joy. That was fun.
And then the Romans Unite Unify Italy was the other most recent one I heard. And
yeah,
always a good discussion.
Oh, yeah, that stuff sounds great.
Yeah. it's usually
I'm gonna have to tune into that.
Riffing off some questions, and sometimes we know better. We have the more answers ready than other times, but it usually works pretty well.
So, Jasper, is there anything else that we've missed about this year's Great Wargaming Survey that you're just itching to tell that you're...
Yeah, the website.
GreatWargamingSurvey.com?
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
Can you tell us in long enough
to get to that.
Jeez. Doing the recording?
I hope that's going to be in the show notes.
I would hope so. I mean, we'll have to talk to our show notes scribe to make sure.
That would be a mess if you didn't do that.
Mr. Shoebridge gets that in there. Of course he will. He's good. I was recording my video promo, and I'm sitting here, and I must have been channeling Henry, because I was like, greatwargamingsurvey.com, and I said it like 19 times in this like 10-second video. I'm like, go to blah, blah, blah. So it's seared in my brain. I'll be dreaming in tonight, and in my dreams will be like, greatwargamingsurvey.com, why am I dreaming of greatwargamingsurvey.com?
Wake up with an elbow on your back.
And my wife was like, will you just be quiet?
Go back to sleep. Jeez.
But I have to take the survey. Yes, you do. But only once. Yes.
It's like one of those Chinese click farms. We'll just keep on like filling out your survey.
Oh, yeah.
Don't do that.
No.
It invalidates the results. Yeah. That would not be good. Why don't we then move on to my favorite segment of the show? It's the mailbag segment. And I love it because that's a chance where listeners can write in or write on our social media and just talk about things that we've talked about. So we did.
This is not my favorite part of the show. And you know why?
Because it's not you talking?
No. Well, that's part of it. But
why is it?
It because the show is going to be over soon.
Oh, that's really sweet of you, Mike.
Well, that's the way I feel about it.
Now I feel like a jerk for like making a
you
joke
are.
At your expense.
You are a jerk. You're the jerk that we were talking about earlier.
Well, I know. People should write about me in the survey.
I'm going
well,
to.
You want to change. I don't want to give you Jonathan.
I'm going to discard my old survey, and I'm throwing you in. I'm throwing you in.
Guys, I'm going
you're
home.
Gonna be
no.
one of the others. You're going to be the other from now on.
It's like Francis on that YouTube channel. He's just always angry at everything. I don't even remember his YouTube name, but
really,
anyway.
People on YouTube are angry about everything.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's not all of them, because I watch a lot of YouTube, because, well, we're going to talk about this in an announcement, but we do video, too. I mean, we're an audio podcast, but we do video, and so I spend a lot of time watching other people's videos to be like, wow, they do this really good, and I wish we could do that really good, and a lot of them are really, like, nice and friendly, but then you come across like the angry part of YouTube, and they're just like, we dislike everything, and we dislike rainbows and bunnies, and I'm like, what? And rainbows and bunnies, what would you dislike about that? But they do.
I'm gonna have to avoid that part of YouTube.
Yeah, that's not a good YouTube part.
No, I'm not going there.
Think of it as your version of Reddit. You just want to stay away from it.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know what's up with that.
So we have a Facebook page, wargamingrecon.com/Facebook, one of our most active social media, because I like Facebook, and which is a stupid reason for why it's active, but it's the truth. So listener Gabriel commented about episode 185, where we talked about how to prep for a convention game. And he said, quote, for the first 10 years of wargaming, I was able to keep my purchases to less than $100 a year. Then again, I was doing 1/72nd scale, and eBay is your friend for deals, but folks shouldn't feel that it needs to be expensive. Sometimes that is part of the fun, finding the stuff at a discount or scratch building. Right now, we're doing a lot of scratch builds on the Victorian Science Fiction Miniature Gaming Association group. Now, as I am older and I do have more income laying around, sure, I have to watch my spending because I can easily do $1,000 a year. And if I'm not careful, but that is self-inflicted. Unquote. So Gabriel, first of all, thank you very much for writing in. You are a frequent commenter, and I enjoy reading what you have to say. But I think this is really interesting, and I think this kind of plays into this whole topic of the Great Wargaming Survey. It's almost as if I picked this comment on purpose to match with our discussion tonight.
You would never do that.
I know. I did. Me to put all that effort in and things. I'm the man behind the curtain, right? But it goes to show that we don't need to spend a lot of money on our hobby. Like, you can spend, you know, billions of dollars, I guess, if you wanted, and if you were Bill Gates, but you can do things affordably, and you can have a lot of fun gaming affordably. You don't have to spend an arm and a leg to do it. And I always love seeing in the questions how people have a chance to comment not only about what my favorite, you know, types of gaming are, and my systems and all that kind of stuff. But I believe there's a question that you normally use, Yasser, about what you expect your expenses to have been for wargaming. Mm-hmm. And mine's always in the cheapest tier, whatever that happens to be. But I'm always interested in, like, how many people max that out and just, like, spend a lot of money, and how many people don't.
We'll go look that up.
What the return is, you know, what the ROI is on, like, if you spend like $5,000 in a year on wargaming, one, are you having a better time? And, like, what are you getting cooler stuff? Like, I don't know.
Well, it's because it's another new thing that wasn't in there before. Like, your favorite aspects about the hobby, and we never had the option of just saying I love collecting the miniatures, and we added that this year, and it looks like it's very, very popular. I think a lot of people just, you know, it's just, you know, what's it called, retail therapy.
Yeah, that's not like a main feature of the hobby for me, but I do like to collect them.
I tell you, if you had that question last year, I would have been like, yes, that's me. But I have this new approach to my wargaming life now. And it's probably because of having a 2.5-year-old and realizing that money just doesn't go very far when you have a 2.5-year-old. Something a lot of people, I'm sure, were aware, but I was not until I had a 2.5-year-old. And so I decided that I really can't spend money on wargaming unless it does something for me. So, like, it has to be something like a game I'm going to play a lot. Like, I can't just go flavor the month thing, which I used to do. I'd be like, oh, $80 or this for this month, sure, $80 next month, $100 for, and spend money that was like ridiculous, way too much consumerism. So I've scaled that back, and for me anyway, I'm like, I'm gonna look, and if I'm not gonna play a game for like a year, I need to get like a lot of playability out of it. If I'm going to buy it and think, well, yeah, maybe I'll play it with my group of friends, or I hope to, mm-hmm. I'm not going to pick it up. Like, I have to know beforehand. Like, I do little market research myself, and I'll send like group texts out. So guys, there's this game. I want to get it. It sounds really good. Who will definitely agree to play on such and such a date? And if I can get at least two of those set up, then I'll buy a game, because I figure at least I got two games out of it. Or I'll buy minis or rules or whatever. Or if it's for the show, because then it's a show expense, and you know, we're doing a service for people by talking about things. So, like when I did Cigar Box Battle Mats, we did that, and yeah, we're gonna be doing another
one right there.
Yeah, well, it's where I love this mat.
Get that plug in there.
Well, I tell you, they're gonna get another plug, and actually, it's great because it ties back to WSNS, because they had that great was it a 2-page or a 1-page full page spread not long ago, talking about their products. But they're doing a Kickstarter coming out, and I'm getting a review copy of the Kickstarter double-sided mat, which is on its way to me right now. I'm so excited about it. But like, these are things they're worth spending money on, because one, they're fantastic, but two, like, it really helps everyone who listens to the show to know whether something's worth spending their money on it or not. So it's just like reading Ancient Warfare or WSNS or Medieval Warfare or to a lesser degree, Ancient History, because people look to you guys and they trust you. They know that if you give a review of a product, that you're going to do it fairly, that you're going to say, you know, this is what's good about it, this is what's bad. But if you support something, they know that means, well, maybe they too should go and pick it up because it's worth their time. And it's, I think it's something all of us who kind of do this sort of stuff really take to heart. And so, like, I don't mind spending money on that because it's worthwhile. But if it's just me being like, oh, let me go get those new Peter Pig minis, or let me go get another thing for Black Powder Bolt Action, I'm going to think twice. But not everyone does that. But as of last year, I would have been like, yes, I will just buy minis because
very awesome. Oh, wow. Well, it just, I'm just looking at it, spending the lowest category. So that's about per year. less than sort of 250, 300, depending on your currency. That's nearly 20%. So a lot of people who try to keep it limited.
That's me. Hey, I'm not alone.
But no. About 9% spend, you know, in the 2000 range. And there's, wow. there's another, or like you want to be specific type text box below. And there's people who say, I spend 500 euros a month.
Oh,
that kills me.
Oh, that's nuts. I love my hobby, but man, that is nuts. Holy crap. That's like going to the casino.
Oh, man. Wait, and people do.
You're not going. Yeah, what are you doing with all that stuff? How,
are
you kidding me? What, are you just piling it up in the garage? Wow.
Well, I suppose it's possible that they that you know, if you include having your minis painted too or something.
That's expensive.
Well, it, that whole goes, mythos too.
Most people are end up, you know, the what is it? The average is going to be probably in the, you know, as it always is, in about, you know, sort of 500 a year range. So it's somewhere between 50 and maybe, yeah, $50 to $75 a month.
Yeah. That's not that bad.
I mean, it's hard because with a question like that, someone could look at it and be like, oh, well, you know, I've spent whatever that would work out to over the course of a year, and they may have spent it in like one or two goes. Like they go to Salute and they spent their money for the year, but then per month it works out to, you know, whatever. So when you
it's a difficult question, because I suspect a lot of people sort of, and that's why you end up with, you know, about 50 a month, is a lot of people go, you know, it's about, you know, about that this month, not very much that month, maybe a little more. But the other question is, you know, what is your hobby? What do you consider your hobby budget? Is that just the new minis that you buy, or does it include rules? Does it include paint? I mean, if you don't pay attention, you can spend a hell of a lot of money on just getting new paints every month. Does it include travel to a convention? Does it include the lodging and dinner and food and stuff you buy at a convention?
I didn't include any of that stuff.
Does it include your research materials that you might buy, or background stuff? You know, there's all kinds of things you could think of that but, you know.
Apparently there's all kinds of things I didn't think of.
Well, I'll tell you, it was maybe a month ago, Adrian, who's a co-host of the show, and we were playing a game of Bolt Action at our local gaming store, and we had all this terrain out, and I looked down at the board, and, you know, we had minis and stuff and everything out, and I looked at him, and I said, you know, there's a lot of money on the table, and he just kind of paused for a minute, and I could tell he was, like, trying to discern what I was thinking, and I was like, there's easily, like, $3,000 worth of stuff on the table. And he looked at me and he's like, you know, you're right, because it's really high quality pre-made terrain or painted stuff or this. And like, it wasn't a lot of stuff, but it adds up. And it may not appear to it if you're not in the hobby, but you're in the hobby, you realize like a set of dice is not cheap, and you just kind of go from there. And next thing you know, it's $3,000 you spent.
Yep. You can easily spend a lot of money. On the other end, there's plenty of hobbies that are way more expensive. Mm-hmm. And if you're a little bit careful, I think you can have a lot of fun and have a nice board and nice terrain and nice minis that will last you a long time.
Well, that's what I try to do.
Very true.
Yeah, I've been running games with the same stuff for quite a while. I add a few things. I try to figure out a way to do it without spending a ton of money.
You make a lot of your stuff, which is quite nice. But that's a skill you have.
Too. That's my one of my favorite parts of the hobby. You know, you can't always play a game, but you can make something if you.
Very true.
Yeah, you know, if you're home with it and you got the stuff you need.
We got an iTunes review recently, which was quite nice. It's a 5-star review titled "Top Notch" from Landon Solano of the Grunt Work Podcast. It's a podcast I actually listen to. Probably not going to appeal to a lot of people who listen to Wargaming Recon. It's about that old 90s sitcom, Home Improvement, with Tim Allen, but it's very well done. I love that show. It was good. But he says, quote, really impressed with the quality of the content and how enjoyable it was, even being semi-unfamiliar with the topic. unique perspective, can't wait to consume all there is to listen to, unquote. So, Lyndon, wow. Thank you for the 5-star review. And I tell you, if you want to listen to everything we've done here on the show, like, skip the old stuff. Like, we've been doing this a long time, like a long, long time.
So from which episode should people be watching?
Oh, God.
You're saying skip the old stuff.
Well, no, for us, I mean, you can watch whatever you want from Home Improvement, but for Wargaming Recon, oh, man. That's a great question, and one I am not prepared for.
It wasn't even on the survey.
No, like, we should do a survey for the show. I don't know what we'd put on it, but like, we should do one and get. The newest episode is where you should start, because the newest is always the best episode.
This episode right here, this one.
This one is the best one you will listen to, because we're always getting better. We're always having someone more exciting than whatever, and so. You listen to the newest one, and then you can cherry pick your other stuff and see what you like. We got like 12 or 13 years worth of content.
That's a lot. Yeah.
It's something like 24, 25 hours minimum per year that we put out. Some years we do like 30 or more. I don't know who has time to listen to all that, to be honest.
I don't.
And I'm here every episode recording it. So. I don't know, but that's a great question, actually. I'm going to have to give some more serious thought to that. And
maybe do a survey.
We'll do a Survey Monkey. We'll do a bad one because we don't have experience with it. But maybe we'll do a Survey Monkey. I don't know.
Yeah, but we know someone that knows something about surveys.
That's true. We'll be writing you emails. Yes, for it. So what do you think?
Okay.
And you'll say,
Monkey doesn't have enough to do.
We have some cool announcements too, actually, to share. So people who've been listening for multiple episodes over the course of this year have heard little tidbits of this kind of teased out, but we're actually getting much closer to it. So according to the Nerd Broadcasting Network, which is the broadcasting entity that we are under in part for our video content, we are mere weeks away from being live with our Roku channel. So people will be able to watch Wargaming Recon content on Roku. It's going to also appear on Amazon Fire, Apple TV, Google Play, and there's talks. They're just talks now, but there are talks that might end up even becoming a cable TV channel that you just get on regular cable TV. I'm not sure who's going to want to watch all this, but it's not just us. We are the flagship Wargaming enterprise on there, but there's going to be like geek news on there and other stuff, but like, we're doing the show. So like, we record this live, we have video. So you can see us talking, but we're doing actual play recordings. We're doing reviews and unboxings and how to's and the tutorials for like making terrain and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be all in there. So we're really close to this coming out, and I'm pretty excited. We're kind of exploding all over the place, and tied in with this, it won't be on the Roku channel, but early next year I can announce there's a documentary I'm in that's going to make its debut. And it's called "And Now a Word from a Gamer." It's put out by the same people, and they're finishing up the edits now, which is pretty exciting.
Cool. Oh, good. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. I don't know how much I'm in it. I just know I'm in it, and they got recordings with some people who are associated with Gary Gygax and like the origins of D&D and all that kind of stuff. And I don't honestly know how they chose me to be in it, but I'm in it.
When we plug it, we'll just mention that you're in it.
Yeah, it'd be like Jonathan's in it and some other people. So that'll be a reason for people to watch. And then we should thank our Patreon backers, because they helped to make the show possible. So I want to thank Patrick, Chris Parker from dayofbattlegames.com, Kyle from Vermont, and I want to say that you too could become a Patreon backer. It costs as little as $1 per month. That's less than a cup of coffee. We are halfway to meeting our next Patreon goal. With your support, we can make that possible. Patreon backers get episodes before everyone else. They get extra content that you know can't easily get otherwise. And you can become a backer by going to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. We have a variety of other reward levels and things. You can get custom dice, and we do it all, t-shirts or whatever. And if there's something special you want to do, reach out to us. We'll make a custom level for you. We got a custom level for another backer, and we craft it to meet your needs. So that's something cool that you can do. And then you can check out the show notes for this episode, because we talked about a lot of things. You got to remember that greatwargamingsurvey.com web address. And if you forget it, it's in the show notes. You don't have to worry. So just remember wargamingrecon.com/WR189. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR189. And that'll have the stuff we talked about, because Josh Shoebridge, our show notes scribe and our audio editor, is fantastic at writing that stuff up. So he's going to get that taken care of for all of you to stay tuned with that. And our next episode, it's episode 190, comes out August 21st. And I can't believe we're already there, 190. Getting closer to that 200. Pretty exciting.
Almost there.
Before you know it, and I tell you, I never thought we'd get this far when I first started the show a million years ago. And actually, it's a huge cliffhanger, because when we end the year, we're going to end on episode 198. So close. People are just going to have to wait for 2018 for 200, and maybe we'll do something cool. I don't know.
You should.
Yeah. We did for our 100th, we did 100 like wargaming questions or something like that. And so we put it out to the community, and they got to like share stuff, and then I compiled it. We had this list of 100 things that we went through, and it's quite an episode. It was a mammoth episode. And
yeah, that was kind of fun.
It was good. It was a lot of work though. Like a lot of, it's probably as much work, Jasper, as you have to put into both creating and then analyzing the Great Wargaming Survey.
Well, that's a lot of work then.
Yeah. it was worth it, but I'm not eager to do that much work anytime soon.
Yeah, you don't want to do it every time, that's for sure.
No, but unlike then, now there's a team of us here. There's a team of six people involved with Wargaming Recon, so maybe we just spread the wealth, as it were, and we can all do a little bit of it.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah, you could do that.
Well, I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. Jasper, it was so good to have you on again. And
thank you for having me.
We waited.
Yeah, nice talking to you, Jasper.
You weren't on at all last year. I don't know what the heck I was thinking, but we got to get you on at least once a year, because this waiting stuff is not for me.
All right. Fine. I'm here. I'm on the other side of a computer.
We'll make it work. Mike, thank you again for being a co-host. It's always a joy.
Yeah, I made it. I got to go to bed soon, but I made it.
Yeah, you got to be up at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I do.
I don't know how you do it.
Some more fun on the roof.
Yeah, you'll get there. Well,
yeah, thank you. Have to.
Thank you, everyone, again for listening to the show. And remember, no matter how busy you are, no matter how much time you're spending clicking away, taking that Great Wargaming Survey at greatwargamingsurvey.com, you know you have to. You need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit WargamingRecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.